There has never been a greater betrayal by a president of the United States. I will vote to impeach the president. That from Liz Cheney. She's the head of the House Republican Caucus. She's the third ranking Republican. She's the second ranking Cheney. That's how awful this president is. He has made me grateful to Liz Cheney. Can we impeach him for that? Oh, it burns.
Yes. Yes, it does. I know how you feel, Mr. Colbert. I do.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
It ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle with
from
you.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A. Also in Red Bluff and Redding, California on KFOI, Round Mountains, KKRN, and Eureka's KGOE. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. In Lancaster, Pennsylvania on WLRI, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. Oh, I wish I was there. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP. In Rochester, New York on WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ. Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day for you on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, Workforce Rising, No Lies Radio, Deprogrammed Radio, Verdant Square Radio, and Detour Talk, Blanketing Planet Earth. 5 days a week, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow. Feeling sweller than ever, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. In an article at Washington Post today about Donald Trump being isolated and angry at aides for failing to defend him as he is impeached again. Oh, sad. The reporters Phil Rucker, Josh Dossie, and Ashley Parker note, among many other things, when Donald Trump on Wednesday became the first president ever impeached twice, he did so as a leader increasingly isolated, sullen, and vengeful. Told you it was sad, Desiree. With less than 7 days remaining in his presidency, Trump's inner circle is shrinking, offices in his White House are emptying, and the president is lashing out at some of those who remain. He is angry that his allies have not mounted a more forceful defense of his incitement of the mob that stormed the Capitol last week, advisors and associates say. Though Trump has been exceptionally furious with Vice President Pence, his relationship with lawyer Rudy Giuliani, one of his most steadfast defenders, is also said to be fracturing, according to people with knowledge of the dynamics between the men. Trump has instructed aides not to pay Giuliani's legal fees, two officials said.
Surprising absolutely no one.
Right. Who could have seen that coming? But here's the reason why I want to share this article. In a stark illustration of Trump's isolation, the White House did not mount a vigorous defense Wednesday as House members debated his fitness for office and ultimately voted to impeach him. The president's aides did not blast out talking points to allies. His press secretary did not hold a briefing with reporters. His advisors did not do television interviews from the White House's North Lawn. His lawyers and legislative affairs staffers did not whip votes or seek to persuade lawmakers to vote against impeachment. This is both because there was no organized campaign to block impeachment and because many of his aides believe Trump's incitement of the riot was too odious to defend. White House counsel Pat Cipollone, who was central to the president's defense in his first impeachment a year ago, told other staffers to make sure word got out that he was not involved in defending Trump this time. A senior administration official said, quote, "I just think this is the logical conclusion of someone who will only accept people in his inner orbit if they are willing to completely set themselves on fire on his behalf. And you've just reached a point to where everyone is burnt out." Well, no goddamn kidding, senior administration official. We know how you feel. A former senior administration official in touch with the White House said in describing the staff mindset right now, quote, "People are just over it. The 20th couldn't come soon enough." Oh, well, tell us about it, former senior administration official. Quote, "Sometimes there's a bunker mentality or us versus them or righteous indignation that the Democrats or the media are being unfair. But there is none of that right now," the official said. "People are just exhausted and disappointed and angry and ready for all this to be done." I'm sure I have no idea what they are talking about. Welcome to the Bradcast. Not long after Donald Trump earned the crowning distinction of becoming the first U.S. president to get impeached twice on Wednesday, he released a video in which he went further than ever in calling for an end to post-election violence. He pretended that he opposed violence of any kind. Desi Doyen, did you see that video by any chance?
Yes, I saw it. It looked weird to me, like something was wrong with the lighting or something. I'm not quite sure. Couldn't put my finger on it.
Well, it was something wrong with the president, I think. he said that his movement was, in fact, against violence of all forms, that despite his MAGA mob beating and killing at least one Capitol officer during their January 6 insurrection and riot at the U.S. Capitol, and sending dozens more of those Capitol police officers to the hospital, pretending to claim that he and his movement are all about law and order. They didn't want this. Well, we're not going to play that video on this show because, well, for several reasons. A, it's nonsense and you shouldn't buy it at all, because he only released such a statement now and a week after he had called on supporters to take over the Capitol building. And so now that he realizes he's in some potential criminal trouble for instigating an attempted coup on the U.S. government 1 week before he was impeached for having incited an insurrection that day, and now he wants to put out this video. Oh, please, we don't want any violence. Our movement has never been about violence. Of course, your movement has always been about violence. As Washington Post, Greg Sargent notes today, here's what Trump did not say in his 5-minute video taped in the Oval Office. First, that Joe Biden is the legitimate winner of the 2020 election. I should note he did not even mention Joe Biden's name or that he would be the next president. Second, says Greg, that Trump's own big lie to the contrary was the singular cause of the deadly mob assault on the Capitol and is perhaps the fundamental reason we face the threat of more right-wing insurgent violence to come. A new federal intelligence bulletin that Greg obtained underscores the stakes of this omission. It flatly warns that the lie that the 2020 election was fraudulent could be a key inspiration of domestic extremist violence going forward. Here's the key conclusion of this January 13 memo. So this was the day that that Trump was impeached, this memo from the FBI. It was a joint product of numerous agencies, including Homeland Security and the Justice Department. Issued on the day of Trump's second impeachment. Quote, "Amplified perceptions of fraud surrounding the outcome of the general election and the change in control of the presidency and Senate, when combined with longstanding domestic violence extremists drivers, such as perceived government or law enforcement overreach and the anticipation of legislation perceived by some domestic violence extremists to oppose or threaten their beliefs, very likely will lead to an increase in DVE, that's domestic violence extremist violence. In other words, the fact that he has been saying over and over and over again for the past 2 months that the election was stolen from them is the central driver in violence that is feared by the federal government from domestic violence extremists.
And remember, he's also been talking about before the election for months that it was going to be stolen without any evidence, of course, whatsoever. But for months now, he has been laying down that propaganda.
The memo defines domestic violence extremists as U.S.-based actors who seek to realize political or social goals through unlawful acts of force or violence. This broad term, notes Sargent, encompasses those who are motivated by anti-government and anti-authority sentiment, among other things. And I should also note that its definition is almost the exact same as that of terrorist, if you look it up. According to the Oxford Dictionary, quote, a person who uses unlawful violence and intimidation in the pursuit of political aims. That is the very definition of terrorist. Does that not sound exactly like what the MAGA mob did last week when they attempted to unlawfully enter the Capitol and intimidate lawmakers into not declaring Joe Biden to be the lawful winner of the presidential election? Not to mention threaten to kill lawmakers like Vice President Mike Pence, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and even New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who says that she believes she was very nearly assassinated in that, yes, terrorist assault by Trump supporters on the Capitol. In other words, the memo concludes, as Sargent reports, we face a very likely escalation in political violence, violence designed to achieve political ends. That would be terrorism, Greg. And it flows in no small part from the lie that the election's outcome was illegitimate. Had Trump not repeated that lie day after day and week after week and tweet after tweet continuously every day since Election Day and before Election Day, as Des points out, and even up to and beyond the assault on the Capitol, that assault very likely would never have happened. So yes, Trump is responsible for it. He encouraged it. He didn't try to stop it after it began. He was reportedly enjoying it back at the White House, watching it on television, and is only now that he's finally become convinced he may face, you know, criminal liability for it, now he's pretending to be outraged by it. And please, no violence, not in our movement. Juliette Kayyem, a former Homeland Security official, tells Sargent, quote, the animating lie has not been remedied by Trump, adding that Trump still refuses to counter, quote, the very lie that led to this violence, and he has not done so yet, she says. The memo, according to Kayyem, continued, shows that, quote, his own intelligence agencies have concluded that the lie that the election was stolen, which Trump continues to nurture, will motivate violence in the future. The memo, again, obtained by Sargent, repeatedly stresses the point about the election fraud lie inspiring future violence. It notes ominously that, quote, the capability and intent of domestic violence extremists to engage in violence at lawful gatherings very likely will increase throughout 2021. And it describes a key motivator of this as follows, quote, ongoing false narratives by DVEs, again, domestic violence extremists, that the 2020 general election was illegitimate or fraudulent, and the subsequent belief its results should be contested or unrecognized. That is the key motivator for these people now that are threatening violence, that are causing violence, that brought violence a week ago to the U.S. Capitol. Counterintuitively, the importance of this is underscored by none other than the 10 House Republicans who joined all House Democrats on Wednesday to impeach Trump for incitement of insurrection, says Greg. Notably, many of those GOP lawmakers in their statements in one way or another do articulate the key point here that the election's outcome was legitimate and that Trump incited the violence by relentlessly promoting the falsehood that it was not. So you have to turn to these Republicans who actually say, yes, Joe Biden was the legitimate winner. Sargent says, it's astounding that we must be thankful to those Republicans for being willing to say this, but unfortunately and consequentially, it remains the thing that many other Republicans still refuse to say. I don't know if you saw it. There was, I think it was in the rules markup for the impeachment the day prior to the impeachment where Jim Jordan was being questioned by Jim Jordan, Republican of Ohio, was being questioned by Jim McGovern, the chair of the Rules Committee, trying to get Jordan to say, did Joe Biden win fair and square? He kept asking him over and over again. Jim Jordan would not say it. Would not say it. Despite the fact that the U.S. intelligence finds that the fact that these people believe the election was stolen is the primary driver of violence. Good work, Jim Jordan. Sargent notes it also bears repeating that well over 100 congressional Republicans, I think it was 147 to be exact, supported Trump by voting to overturn the electoral vote count, reversing an entire American presidential election on the completely false and phony grounds that the outcome was corrupted or fraudulent. And they did that after the deadly assault on the Capitol, on their own workplace. If this memo turns out to be right, he notes that driving lie could be the inspiration for more violence and possibly even a sustained violent insurgency. And this points to another deep perversity here, he notes. To wit, Republicans have justified their opposition to impeaching Trump over the insurrection with appeals to unity. But as Khayyem notes, the memo suggests that the refusal to hold lies about the election's legitimacy directly accountable for inspiring that assault could itself help feed conditions for more conflict and unrest later. Somewhat echoing the conversation we had here on this show on yesterday's show with former diplomat and Congressman Tom Perriello, Khayyem says, quote, the myth of unity without accountability is the best way to move forward. That itself threatens to breed more violence. So yes, this sudden call for unity by Republicans during the impeachment debate in the House on Wednesday was darling. It came up again and again and again throughout the debate. Oh, this threatens to, we need unity right now. This impeachment will only anger Trump supporters. Well, in other words, will only anger the terrorists. At a time that we should be seeking unity and healing because impeachment would be just so divisive to the MAGA mob. Never mind that almost none of those Republicans who were so worried about unity we're doing what the FBI memo suggests needs to be done right now to recognize that Biden won the election fair and square and that Trump lost it fair and square. Where were those assertions from Republicans? They were very rare indeed during yesterday's impeachment debate. I think I played Kevin McCarthy on the show. Didn't we play him yesterday?
Yes, we did.
Saying that, yes, Biden did win the election, but he was very rare. Among the Republicans who
I believe he was one of the only ones.
Yeah.
If not the only one.
So we didn't hear that at all from any of these folks yesterday who were arguing why Trump shouldn't be impeached because we need unity. We haven't heard it over the past week since the Republican terrorist assault on the Capitol, much less since the November 3rd election. In a Twitter thread from author and columnist David Rothkopf the day before the impeachment debate, as Republicans were unveiling their "we need unity" defense to Trump's so-called divisive impeachment proceeding. Rothkopf wrote, things the GOP did not find divisive. Launching an insurrection against the U.S. government, seeking to disenfranchise 81 million Americans, seeking to negate the votes of entire states, seeking to negate the votes of African Americans, attacking the Capitol, killing police officers, inciting a riot that claimed five lives, participating in the largest act of domestic terrorism in U.S. history, hunting down Congress people in the halls of Congress, supporting and defending white supremacists, supporting and defending neo-Nazis, turning U.S. federal forces against peaceful demonstrators across the country, calling Mexicans rapists, discriminating against Muslims, putting children in cages, ending protections for children born innocently in the U.S., promoting economic policies that help only the rich in America and fostering the worst inequality in our history. They didn't find any of that to be divisive. Seeking to stigmatize those who sought to do the right thing to protect America from a deadly pandemic, contributing to the spread of a disease that has killed hundreds of thousands, disproportionately, by the way, people of color and the elderly. Seeking policies that deny COVID relief to states with democratic leaderships. That wasn't divisive. Seeking to help only those close to the GOP leadership with COVID relief, repeatedly attacking the credibility of the FBI, the CIA, and other intelligence agencies, supporting and collaborating with foreign enemies, lying tens of thousands of times to the American people, calling for Hillary Clinton to be locked up, obstructing all judicial nominees from a Democratic president, countless hours of expensive, pointless Benghazi investigations. That wasn't divisive. Countless hours of expensive, pointless investigations and unfound conspiracy theory mongering about Hillary Clinton's emails. Rothkopf continues, calling for the impeachment of Bill Clinton for telling a single lie while Donald Trump has lied more than 20,000 times. Unending attacks from Trump on the media as, quote, the enemy of the people. Was any of that divisive? Did any of that bring us unity? Did any of that help us heal as a nation? Calling Democrats socialists when they are not, communists when they are not, pretending the left is behind riots that were caused by right-wing extremists. And the list goes on and on and on, says Rothkopf. Divisiveness and attacks on U.S. unity are the stock in trade of the modern GOP. Accountability, patriotism, law and order, defending our national security and preserving the ideals of the founders, things they like to say they are for, have become the polar opposites of that for which they truly stand. There is one reason and one reason only they oppose seeking accountability for Trump's seditious plot and the attempted coup against the government. They know they are culpable. They know their leaders sought not just to divide the country, but to tear its government down. They oppose impeachment and serious consequences for all involved, because that would mean many of their leaders would be stripped of their ability to serve in the U.S. government as per the 14th Amendment and face potential serious criminal liability in the bargain. They know that seeking justice and defending the country and its institutions and its principles puts them squarely in the crosshairs, and so they are desperately, if feebly, trying to deflect attention. Don't fall for it, writes Rothkopf. Well, we won't. You shouldn't either. Unless they actually push back against the big lie that the election was stolen from Donald Trump, you can bet your bottom dollar that things are going to get much worse before they get better. Congressman Jamie Raskin of Maryland responded to some of these phony GOP claims that impeachment would get in the way of healing and be divisive, get in the way of their newfound interest in unity. because it was just so divisive, and it'll anger Trump supporters. Here's how Raskin replied to that argument during Wednesday's impeachment debate.
They may have been hunting for Pence and Pelosi to stage their coup, but every one of us in this room right now could have died. As Senator Lindsey Graham said, the mob could have blown the building up. They could have killed us all. And now the far right is calling for return engagement from January 17th to January 20th. They're asking the president to pardon the conspirators in last week's rampage as they prepare for a race war again next week. And it's a bit much to be hearing that these people would not be trying to destroy our government and kill us if we just weren't so mean to them.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, don't fall for it. These guys are doing nothing right now more than trying to save themselves at this point. This is what this is all about. Nor, by the way, should you buy the claims floated by those close to Mitch McConnell, the ones who claim that he is open to voting to convict Trump and that he's, quote, furious about what all of this. I will believe that when I see it. If he was so furious about it, he could have agreed with Chuck Schumer to call the Senate back into session and the trial in Donald Trump's impeachment could have begun today. Today, they could be considering removing Donald Trump from office. But Mitch McConnell didn't do that. No trial will occur until Trump will be safely out of office at this point. And that's thanks to Mitch McConnell, who would like us to believe that he's furious about what Trump did and he's considering voting to convict. He hasn't said that, by the way. As Eric Bullard points out in his press run newsletter today, McConnell is allowing those close to him to leak that to the media, who then go out and dutifully report it. See? Mitch McConnell is a decent, thoughtful guy, isn't he? He's very troubled by all of this. As to this memo from the FBI and the other intelligence agencies on Wednesday warning about domestic violence extremists, which, by the way, is code word for white supremacist terrorists. As Spencer Ackerman notes at Daily Beast, we must not allow what he calls radical white terror to justify a major expansion of law enforcement authorities or crackdowns on civil liberties. That's true. Avoiding this entails refraining from treating the assault on the Capitol as another 9/11. I agree, which is why it is now disheartening to see, even if I understand why it may be necessary, that the National Mall will apparently be shut down entirely between now and Inauguration Day. So, yeah, Donald Trump finally found a way to make sure that there will be fewer people at the next president's inaugural than there was for his.
Oh, good Lord.
National Park Service is very concerned about what could happen based on all of this. There will be more than 20,000 National Guard troops have been called up to protect the presidential swearing in on the 20th. And the mall, which has traditionally been the site where the public has gathered to view the inauguration at the Capitol in person and on the big jumbotrons, that will now be closed down. One of the officials says that means no one will be able to get into the mall. They're closing down 13 rail stations in D.C. within the downtown security perimeter. They're altering bus routes in the area. Airbnb also announced that it's canceling and blocking reservations in the D.C. area in the days leading up to the inauguration. So the terrorism has worked, at least to some extent. And yes, all of this sounds not unlike post 9/11 security preparations. Going back to Sargent, he concludes today, one thing we know now is this: if the goal is to avert more violence and restore civil calm, as Republicans themselves claim, Trump and a lot more Republicans need to declare unambiguously that Joe Biden will legitimately be the next president. They should also forthrightly debunk the big lie to the contrary, while acknowledging the true danger their party's trafficking in it has posed. It didn't just singularly cause the storming of the Capitol. It could also inspire a lot more civil violence to come. And if their failure to counter the big lie that has led to all of this terrorist violence and fear at the and fear that we heard from these folks at the impeachment, fear of, oh, if we bring accountability, things could get much worse. Well, they're also hoping to also rewrite the history of what happened 1 week ago at the Capitol. It's not just the history of the 2020 election they're now rewriting. They're also rewriting this insurrection as if Donald Trump did not call forward the MAGA mob, as if he called them to do, you know, nothing more than peacefully and patriotically make their voices heard. As AP notes in a fact check today, the House impeachment debate on Wednesday heard a distorted account of Donald Trump's remarks to his supporters a week ago when he exhorted them to, quote, fight like hell before they did exactly that and swarmed the Capitol. Here was Pennsylvania Republican Congressman Guy Reschenthaler trying to rewrite history, trying to create yet another big lie right before our very eyes during Wednesday's impeachment debate.
At his rally, President Trump urged attendees to, quote unquote, peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard. There was no mention of violence, let alone calls to action.
Really? Really, Congressman Reschenthaler of Pennsylvania? No? What are you Democrats talking about? He was asking them to peacefully and patriotically let their voices be heard, let their opinions be known, that the election was stolen and that Donald Trump actually won by a landslide and that Joe Biden and the Democrats and Vice President Mike Pence were trying to install an illegitimate president. Just let them know that. Apparently, Congressman Reschenthaler was not paying very close attention. Either that or he's a big liar. In fact, as AP notes correctly, Trump's speech was a call to action, a call to fight and save the country. Quote, we will not take it anymore. And that's what this is all about. We will stop the steal, Trump said. Reschenthaler accurately quoted a line from Trump's more than an hour-long speech when the president told supporters, I know that everyone here will soon be marching over to the Capitol building to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard. But throughout the remarks, Trump spoke of the need to, quote, fight, to be angry, to stop President-elect Joe Biden from taking off, quote, taking office, quote, we fight like hell, and if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore. Quote, we want to go back and we want to get this right because we're going to have somebody in there who should not be in there, and our country will be destroyed. And we're not going to stand for that, said Trump. He said, there's never been anything like this. We will not let them silence your voices. We're not going to let it happen. Not going to let it happen. And then the crowd repeatedly chanted, fight for Trump, fight for Trump. Trump said in response, thank you. He assailed, quote, weak and pathetic Republicans who were not standing with him in his push to overturn the election results. He said, quote, they'll be hell all over the country if Democrats had been robbed of an election. If this had happened to the Democrats, really? Well, maybe I missed the hell all over the country after the 2000 election when it was clear that Al Gore received more votes for president in Florida than George W. Bush did. Did I miss the hell all over the country at that point? Or when evidence strongly suggested that John Kerry was very likely the winner of Ohio in 2004 and with it the presidency that year as well? But Republicans in that state withheld or destroyed most of the evidence. Did I miss the hell all over the country that followed that? Just remember this, Trump went on. You're stronger, you're smarter, you've got more going than anybody, and they try and demean everybody having to do with us. And you're the real people. You're the people that built this nation. You're not the people that tore down this nation. We will not be intimidated into accepting the hoaxes and the lies that we've been forced to believe over the past several weeks. He told his stories again of ballot harvesting and thousands of dead people voting, none of which is true. And he said, and we've got to get rid of the weak Congress people, the ones that aren't any good. No call to action? Really, Congressman? The Liz Cheneys of the world, he said. We've got to get rid of them. We've got to get rid of them. So let's walk down Pennsylvania Avenue, he concluded, after more than an hour. And of course, he didn't walk down Pennsylvania Avenue. He sent those suckers and chumps and patsies down Pennsylvania Avenue to do his dirty work for him, to do his bidding in his, yes, his call to action. They went down bearing Trump flags and overwhelming police and occupying the Capitol in an hours-long melee that left five people dead and, yes, exposed Trump to the impeachment charges that he has now been brought against him by the U.S. House. And I don't like playing Trump's voice on this show at all because it's like nails on a chalkboard at this point. But before this new big lie takes hold in advance of Trump's Senate impeachment trial, whenever it comes, and whenever he and his cowardly sycophants start pretending that Trump in no way had hoped to incite violence that day, what do you mean? He was peaceful and patriotic. Well, here's just some of what he said during his remarks. We've got a much longer cut, but you're welcome. I'm just going to play some of this so that it burns into your brains before they try to rewrite history.
They rigged an election. They rigged it like they've never rigged an election before. We will never give up. We will never concede. It doesn't happen. You don't concede when there's theft involved. We will not take it anymore. It's a disgrace. We're stuck with a president who lost the election by a lot. And we have to live with that for four more years. We're just not going to let that happen. We're going to have somebody in there that should not be in there, and our country will be destroyed, and we're not going to stand for that. And we're going to have to fight much harder. You'll never take back our country with weakness. You will have an illegitimate president. That's what you'll have. And we can't let that happen. We won't have a country if it happens. The radical left knows exactly what they're doing. They're ruthless. And it's time that somebody did something about it. This is a criminal enterprise. Fraud breaks up everything, doesn't it? When you catch somebody in a fraud, you're allowed to go by very different rules. You better do it before we have no country left. And we fight. We fight like hell. And if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore.
So, yeah, really, Congressman Reschenthaler?
At his rally, President Trump urged attendees to, quote, unquote, peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard. There was no mention of violence, let alone calls to action.
Yeah, it was just peaceful and patriotic action. That's all he was asking for. No, not even a call to action. Don't make me play the full version next time, Reschenthaler, because I will do it. All right, let's take a quick break here, and we will come back with a Schadenfreude update, Desi Doyen.
Oh, good. I always enjoy those.
I'm sure you will enjoy. you deserve it as Trump's world continues to crumble around him. That and, oh, an accountability update of sorts in Desi Doyen's Green News Report.
Yep.
A little bit later. For another Republican willing to watch people die on his watch to hold on to power. I'm Brad Friedman. You are listening to The Bradcast.
When you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Yeah, they do.
When you're laughing,
when you're laughing,
when you're laughing,
when you're laughing,
shining.
Yes, it do. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. All right, after that righteous rant, I guess, it's something to smile about in today's Donald Trump Schadenfreude news update. Trump's approval ratings are cratering since he incited an insurrection at the Capitol last week, actually going back longer, going back all the way to December. On Monday, a new survey from Quinnipiac found that a majority of voters say Donald Trump should resign from office after stirring up the mob of supporters that stormed the Capitol. And let's see, 56% of voters polled hold Trump directly responsible for the violent siege on Congress that resulted in at least five deaths. Just 56% of voters. Well, that was on Monday. Maybe more are beginning to get it now as we have learned more about the violent attacks since then. 53%, another majority of voters, say that Trump should resign. 52% say he should be removed from office. should be more, but, you know, we'll take what we can get. Trump's job approval rating, however, has plunged 11 points since December, falling to an all-time low in the Quinnipiac survey of just 33% favorable. But that's, you know, 11-point drop in the past, what are we in, a week and a half since December. But the real schadenfreude comes in Trump's quickly crumbling business empire today. Mayor Bill de Blasio said on Wednesday that New York City will end its contracts entirely with the Trump Organization after Donald Trump fueled a violent mob attack on the U.S. Capitol.
The city of New York is severing all contracts with the Trump Organization. Our legal team has done an assessment, and the contracts make very clear. If a company and the leadership of that company is engaged in criminal activity, we have the right to sever the contract. Inciting an insurrection. Let's be clear. I'm going to say these words again. Inciting an insurrection against the United States government clearly constitutes criminal activity. So the city of New York will no longer have anything to do with the Trump Organization. They have profited from these contracts. They will profit no longer.
Womp womp. The contracts are for two ice skating rinks at Central Park, the Central Park Carousel, and the Trump Golf Links at Ferry Point. That's a city-owned golf course in the Bronx. The mayor said that he would terminate the relationship due to the president's role as inciter-in-chief in that mob riot last week that left five people dead. So, sure, it's fun. It's schadenfreude. But how much could Trump actually be losing by losing a couple of skating rinks and a carousel and a public golf course? Well, actually, it turns out it's quite a bit of money. De Blasio estimated that the Trump Organization profits about $17 million annually from the contracts from just those four sites alone. The Democratic mayor anticipated that the company will put up a fight in court against the decision, but he asserted that an end to the contract stood, quote, on strong legal grounds. New York City is just one of many entities now who are signaling their disgust with Trump by cutting ties. The growing list of groups and individuals shuffling away from Trump in the aftermath of last week's attacks also includes, as we noted, I believe, earlier this week, the 2022 PGA Championship. President of the PGA announced earlier this week that it would be yanking the tournament from the Trump National Golf Club in Bedminster, New Jersey, which has really got a smart news of which has reportedly upset Donald Trump more than anything else that's happened this week. More than the, you know,